Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All week long, we're giving away tickets to see My Chemical Romance at Nationals Park. Right now, let's do that. Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats. You're winning two to go see My Chemical Romance. It's the Black Parade 2026, Tuesday, August 18th, this summer at Nationals Park. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events, courtesy of Live Nation. The show is brought to you by the law firm Kondori and Murad.
We love them. They will help you. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
We're going to cover college football after a juicy Saturday of matchups. The NFL and the Commanders. This is a pigskin blitz here on Grant and Danny. Let's get it going. And to talk college football, we've got our buddy Denton Day, BetMGM Network, and over on SiriusXM. Denton, what was the theme on the college weekend? What were some of the big storylines?
How about Penn State losing to a team that a couple weeks ago lost to New Mexico by 25 points? How hilarious was that? James Franklin said after the loss against Oregon last week that, hey, I can't win the big games. My brother in Christ, you can't win against UCLA either. It was an embarrassing performance by Penn State, fellas. It was the worst and will be the worst loss in college football this year.
That's the game I wanted to ask you about. So I'm going to stay on that one, Denton. I'm watching that in real time. In utter disbelief, Penn State mounted a comeback. They were the better team in the second half, but that didn't matter because they were down so big in the first half. They didn't have interest in scoring before halftime. They ran the ball a bunch of times. Like Tom Petty sang about it when he sang Free Fallin', dude. What is going on there in Happy Valley?
I think there's just they came into that one thinking that they were the big man on campus and that they were just going to steamroll over UCLA. So much so that James Franklin said that after the postgame. He needs to stop talking after postgame because he just admits all of his flaws. He's an open book. He said that I didn't have the team ready. I mean, that's not really a good excuse for this guy. Like, you are so much better. You are so much more talented. And the entire conversation this offseason was about how this is the most talented team. They're going to be more talented than everybody in every single game this year. Well, talent isn't winning football games. Drew Aller was not good enough to win that game. And in 5 months, there's going to be people that convince you he's a top five pick in the draft.
I was going to say, why do I keep hearing so much about Drew Aller early in round one? Every time I watch him, it's unimpressive at the college level.
He must be paying someone. His agent must be the best agent in the world because I'm with you. I have not watched him a single time, Grant, in 3 years now of watching him and thought, this guy's a definitive top round pick. I just don't. I think he'll get drafted at some point, but he's not all that impressive to me. He doesn't make big throws in big games. If you want to beat up on like a Bowling Green, sure, that's awesome. But you have to play good against good competition, and he didn't even play well against a UCLA team that, again, they lost by 25 to New Mexico like 3 weeks ago. It was embarrassing.
Then let's go to Miami. They beat Florida State. They were up big, held on for dear life, ended up escaping with a W. But I was really impressed. I got to see most of the first half plus beginning of the second half where they were just mud-stomping FSU. Barely held on to win that one. Are the Hurricanes national championship good, or is it kind of like there, this is cute?
They are national championship good, but this game was a little bit of foreshadowing, Danny, because Mario Cristobal in the fourth quarter was not great. And Mario Cristobal's Achilles heel for his entire career is that in the fourth quarter, he's not very great. They should have just completely dog-walked them the entire game. But when they needed to be aggressive, they were conservative. When they needed to be conservative, they were aggressive in the fourth quarter. They were just all sort of out of whack. And they're really, really good when they're playing their absolute best. The problem is Mario Cristobal going to cost them? Well, we know he's going to cost them one game. They're not going to go unbeaten. They're going to lose at least once because of his decision-making. Is he going to cost them two in the regular season and get things a little bit muddy?
Arch Manning's not that great. I mean, that's kind of my definitive at this point. The name recognition's awesome, and it seems like a pretty good dude, but just not special against a pretty, frankly, coming into this game, an underwhelming Florida team that I thought would be a lot better with DJ Lagway at quarterback. But he wasn't very good in this one. Like, at a certain point, don't great players play great?
Yeah, he's not a great player. He's a fine quarterback, but he's not a great player. He was walking into this season, and it wasn't like it was his fault, but people were anointing him as the savior of college football. He was never going to be that. I thought he'd be better than what he is right now, but he's just a fine quarterback in college football. And, you know, the flexing at Sam Houston State is cute. Florida's not a very good team, guys, but they're not very good relative to the SEC. They're a lot better than Sam Houston State, and they proved that. You know, you can beat guys that are not going to be playing on Sundays, but Arch is supposed to be beating guys that will be playing on Sundays. They need to rework what they're doing over there, because I think he's still a good player, and he can be a good player, but they're not a good football team right now, and he has been really unimpressive.
Lastly, Denton, let's look ahead to this weekend. We actually got some really good matchups on October 11th coming up on Saturday. Ohio State, Illinois, two teams in the top 20 out of the same conference, so you got the rivalry there. It's a 14.5-point spread. Obviously, Ohio State should win. That should be fun. Alabama, Missouri, two teams in the top 15. Bama's only laying 2.5 points from what I saw in a game being played in Columbia, Missouri. That's a really good matchup. And then Indiana and Oregon.
Indiana, again, dude!
Two top 10 teams. Indiana's 5-0, 2-0 in the Big Ten. This is what they are now after going and recruiting a really, really good football coach from JMU and Kurt Cignetti to come in here and turn the program around. Oregon laying 7.5. What do you make of the weekend slate?
Yeah, that Indiana-Oregon game is going to be the best game of the weekend. I think that one has track meet potential. Ohio State is going to be – that game is going to be over by 1 p.m. because they – Illinois is not going to be able to stop the wide receivers that Ohio State has. Even if Julian Sain isn't this world beater, good luck stopping Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith. It's not going to happen. I don't think they're going to hang 60 on them like Indiana did, but they're going to beat them by a million. I think Oregon and Indiana, the winner of this game is going to be the one that challenges Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. Oregon's really good. Dante Moore's really good. I love him because he sat for a year willingly in an era where no one does that anymore, and it paid off for him tenfold. Beats Penn State, you know, 2 weeks ago, has an opportunity to beat Indiana, but Indiana's really good. They got a quarterback. Everything is solved. We've seen this with our professional team, fellas. Everything is solved when you have a good quarterback. And Fernando Mendoza right now is a really good quarterback for Indiana. That one is going to be a headbanger, and I'm so glad that it's at 3:30 where I get to watch it and enjoy it in its entirety.
Den, you're the best, buddy. Thank you for not bringing it up. That literally everything I said on the pregame show with you and Linnell was incorrect. Appreciate you, dude.
Appreciate it, fellas.
See you, man. Hit the NFL sounder, please. My buddy Mike Jones of The Athletic to talk about the National Football League. Mike, how come there are no undefeated teams through 5 weeks?
I think that it's because that there's just a lot of like evenly matched teams, and it's hard to win in this league, and this is what the league wants. They want it, so parity is there, and that you've got teams that can go out there and win on any given Sunday. You know, some teams are get a little gift-wrapped victories, like the Tennessee Titans, but yeah, nobody's perfect right now. There's some flaws and, you know, little kinks that everybody's going to work out.
Vikings get a win overseas, 21-17. Wasn't pretty against Cleveland. Two-parter here. What'd you think of Dillon Gabriel? Two touchdowns, no picks in his debut. And then also, when J.J. McCarthy's ready, could be this weekend, or in their next game, I should say, for the Vikings, who's their starting quarterback?
Okay, Dillon Gabriel, I thought he did a good job of getting the ball out of his hands quickly, making good decisions, you know, playing within a rhythm. That's what they've wanted to see from their quarterback, and they weren't getting that from Joe Flacco. And so Dillon Gabriel did a good job with that. I would like to see them kind of move the pocket, roll him out a little bit more to help out because he's, you know, 5'11". But he was doing what they wanted him to do, and so, you know, we'll see what happens once the team has game film on him, but that was a good start. As far as the Vikings quarterback situation, J.J. McCarthy has to be their starting quarterback. This is not a move this is not a year that's about winning right now. It's about getting that foundation for him so that way next year or the year after that you can compete for a Super Bowl. You can't get so caught up in, oh, Carson Wentz might give us a chance, that you stunt yourself for the future, because we know how this Carson Wentz movie is going to end. So you make the call. Hey, JJ's our guy. That's the one that we're invested in. And when he's ready to go, you go back to the start, him starting, and you take your lumps.
Mike, the Ravens gave up 44 points and over 6 yards per play to a bad Texans offense. Are they cooked or are they just in trouble?
I think they're cooked. I mean, look, their defense was really bad even before they were missing all those pieces. They were getting gashed every single game. They've given up, I think all but one, they've given up 30-plus points and 300-plus yards. So, yeah, it hurt that they didn't have some of their guys out there, but that's not why they were bad. And, you know, you got to look at, okay, they thought that Zach Orr was going to be the promising guy who trained under Mike McDonald and was going to be ready to take over this defense. But, you know, something's not working right here. Something, there's a disconnect. And then there's also depth issues as well. But it's going to be hard for them, and I don't know that they can recover from this.
Are the Cowboys decent? They throttled the Jets. They got the Panthers next week, who can only beat the Falcons, and then they went back to being terrible. There's a chance they're okay, right?
Yeah, well, Dak Prescott is playing really, really well, and he is carrying that team that's got backup offensive linemen. He doesn't have CeeDee Lamb, but he is playing at a really high level and masking a lot of deficiencies. And so, you know, their defense, they struggle to get after the quarterback, and they struggle to get stops, but Dak is playing really well, put this team on his back. And I think that Brian Schottenheimer's offensive schemes work and they're effective. You're not going to have the luxury of playing the Jets and the Panthers and teams like that every week, but this is a solid team.
Mike Jones of The Athletic joining us on G&D. I want to go to the Patriots beating the Bills in primetime last night and Drake May's coming out party on national TV. What is New England? 3-2, game back of Buffalo right now.
I think that they are a team that is plays hard. They understand the philosophy and the vision that their coach has for them. You know, they're young in certain spots and they are gaining experience, but they play hard. Now look, they got a lot of help from the Bills. You know, there's turnovers. They were sloppy with the ball. We saw Josh Allen kind of make some uncharacteristic mistakes. That really helped them. But Drake May definitely made some great plays. He made some Josh Allen type plays where he's getting yanked down by the shoulder pads, and he still gets the pass off. And they also had Stephon Diggs playing like a man possessed because he wanted to stick it to.
Yeah, where did that guy come from? He hasn't looked like that in 3 years.
No, exactly. And so he'll go back to looking like the shell of himself after this week here. But look, they've got some good pieces. They're building, and that's a big win for them against the Bills.
Mike, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
All right, thanks. I'll see you guys.
Appreciate you, dude. Hit that Local 53 sounder, please. That's Michael Phillips' music. The Richmonder, 910, The Fan, joining us to talk about a win for the good guys. It didn't look like it for a while. It looked like they're about to be down 17-0, Michael, and then the turnover happened. Walk us through it.
Yeah, boy, after all that talk all week, we're going out west early. We're going to spend 3 days in L.A. We're going to figure out how to start fast on the road. They did not start fast on the road, and I think there was very legitimate concern about where this was headed. The turnover was a big play, no doubt about it. I think, to me, the swing play in this whole game was the roughing the punter call, and I know a roughing the punter penalty doesn't make for great radio and great emotional, dramatic turning points, like they're not going to make a Disney movie out of it, but man, it's 17-7 if they run that in. Instead, you flip it, he throws the pass to McCaffrey, which gave everybody juice. You get the three going into the locker room. I thought that was a monster moment in this football game.
Michael, why are they running the ball so well? Bill's averaging almost 7 per carry this year, like he's playing in the Big South or something.
He's legitimately good, and I don't mean to take anything away from the offensive line, from the schemes, from Cliff Kingsbury, from any of that. They're all doing their part. Jaden running obviously frees things up. He's excellent at what he does as well. But, man, Bill's just a good running back all around. He's got good vision. He's got good elusiveness. He hits the hole really well. Man, I like this kid a lot. And, you know, you never want to, after preseason, be like, oh, this guy's going to be an all-star. We've done that so many times. I was skeptical coming out of the preseason. Oh, can he really have this much impact? Yes, he can. I think he's the driving force, and I think we saw a lead back crowned yesterday.
Is this receiving situation? Obviously, Deebo Samuel is going to be Deebo Samuel as long as he stays healthy, but the kind of everybody else gets one or two targets. Is this sustainable as Terry McLaurin and Noah Brown work their way back?
Well, as long as the running game's good and as long as Jaden's running with the ball, that takes so much pressure off of the passing game. Certainly, if they're down 20 in the third quarter it's not, I don't want to find out if those guys have it in that moment, because it doesn't look like a lot of them do have it. So, you know, this is all dependent on continuing to run successfully, Debo continuing to get his touches and being successful with them. Those are all preconditions of this thing continuing to work. But as long as you stay ahead of the chains, Jaden can run. It looks like they didn't need those receivers. If they get to a situation where they need them, I'm not sure I feel phenomenal about that, but they didn't yesterday.
Michael, I'm going to ask you the question that we're going to get to next on the show here on this Victory Monday. Did the defense get right, or did they just take advantage of the right week to play a terrible Chargers offensive front?
Yeah, I'd like to subdivide the defense. The front pass rush is very good and has been for 5 weeks now. And when they're able to get to the opposing quarterback, everybody else looks good too. And when they don't get to the opposing quarterback, everybody else looks bad out there. Here's the evidence I'd throw out to you. You know, the three drives for the Chargers in the second half. In one of those drives, they had two long chunk plays. Both just got called back because of penalties. One of them, they had the weird fourth and two, but remember, they set it up off of 3rd and 14 with a nice completion. And then the third one, they drive all the way to the 1 yard line. Mike Sanders still makes the interception. Monster play in this game. I don't mean to discount the penalties. Certainly the defense has a role in creating those. But that's far from a get right performance. That's a capitalizing on some breaks performance.
Miguel, thank you as always, buddy. Appreciate the time and energy. Have a great week.
Take care, boys.
That's Michael Phillips. That's your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny. Let's talk about that defense. Is this a performance that makes you feel better and differently about the group, or was it just the right week to take on the Chargers? We'll get to that. Plus, at 5 o'clock, Jay Gruden is on the show with a film review from yesterday's performance on Grant and Danny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I'd like to subdivide the defense. The front pass rush is very good and has been for 5 weeks now. And when they're able to get to the opposing quarterback, everybody else looks good too. And when they don't get to the opposing quarterback, everybody else looks bad out there. Here's the evidence I'd throw out to you. You know, the three drives for the Chargers in the second half. In one of those drives, they had two long chunk plays. Both just got called back because of penalties. One of them, they had the weird fourth and two, but remember, they set it up off of 3rd and 14 with a nice completion. And then the third one, they drive all the way to the 1 yard line. Mike Sanders still makes the interception. Monster play in this game. I don't mean to discount the penalties. Certainly the defense has a role in creating those. But that's far from a get right performance. That's a capitalizing on some breaks performance.
That was Michael Phillips in the Beltway Blitz minutes ago. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. We will talk to Jay Gruden in just over 1.5 hours. Did the Commanders defense get right, or did they take advantage of the Chargers being injury riddled and not able to protect Justin Herbert? That's where we want to go here. How much credit do you give the defense, and how much better do you feel about them for a pretty suffocating performance over the final three quarters? They didn't allow a point after the Chargers took a 10-0 lead with 2:57 to go in the first quarter. You can call us now at 800-636-1067. You can get to us on social at Grant H. Paulson and at Funny Danny.
So I always hate answering a question like this because people immediately take it the same way we talked about that luck conversation last year, as if it's some kind of a dig against them. Right? When they go out and do something awesome, which is what they did yesterday, they forced more, they doubled their turnover total, or they're more than doubled, right? We're going from 1 to 3 in 2 games. The stops that they had, the plays that they made, those plays happened. So I'm not taking it away. This, like, it's very easy to, you know, ridicule or mock or belittle when, if they hadn't done this against a beat up offense, especially an offensive line, or hadn't been able to come up with those stops, they were getting dog walked. It was going to be 17-0 before that turnover happened, courtesy of Quan Martin and Marshawn Lattimore. But they took advantage of a banged up Chargers offense. That's what they did. And that's good, right? You got to be at least good enough. We talked about this in week 1 against the Giants. Is this a playoff defense, or is this defense a 12-win defense, or whatever the question happened to be? They took advantage of a bad offense. We've seen that when the Raiders couldn't protect Geno Smith. They harassed him and sacked him a bunch of times. They were nowhere to be found against Atlanta, nowhere to be found against Green Bay. These are the road games where quarterbacks picked them apart. Everyone's open all the time. You watched the start that Herbert got off to. I think it was 12 for 14. Again, wide open receivers. There were half a dozen other plays where receivers were hit in stride, big yards after the catch, but it was called back because of a legal shift or a hold or something to that effect.
Yeah, there were two. I'll give you the downs and distances right here. I got them. 2nd and 19, 24-yard throw, middle of the field catch and run. And then 2nd and 29, and they gave up 31.
Yeah, I think that was the Keenan Allen one, right?
Yes, it was. It was an unbelievable throw, honestly, on the sideline. It was kind of a hole shot. But still, 2nd and 29, you give up 31. I mean, that is laughable.
Yeah, you know, like that saying in hockey, the worst thing to have is a 2-goal lead? That'd be like saying the worst thing in hockey to have is a 12-goal lead when it's 2nd and 29, and we're sitting there quicking in our boots because we know the other team's going to get the first down.
But that's 55 yards on 2 plays on 2nd and a mile, both negated, and then it's 3rd and even longer.
Yeah, so again, it always sounds like I'm skewing so negative when it comes to this, okay? So I don't know what else to do about that other than to say I give them credit. They took advantage of an offensive front that was already makeshift and got more so as the game progressed when guys are shuttling in and out. And that's what you needed to do. They needed to do exactly what they did to get the result that happened yesterday. Because I think if you line up and play it again with a healthier offensive line or one that wasn't in so much flux, that Justin Herbert is picking you apart. Guys are open at this point. I don't think that's been solved here with 1 week. And I hope this is a trend towards something else. I think you're going to give up stuff all season long. Maybe some of those take advantage turnovers can happen, though. Right, because that's what Dan Quinn's defense is, not necessarily the Legion of Boom, where they were just shoving it in every way, six ways from Sunday. But in Dallas, they were going to give up some things, but they were going to take it away. Maybe that's the way that this is going to go here, and I'm hoping maybe that's the start of something.
Yeah, I think I feel really similarly. I'm going to do less equivocating and less apologizing for it, because it's just, this is the job. The grown-ups are having the conversation at this point. They defensively, on the back end, still played poorly, I thought. Period. Was it better as a unit? Of course. The result was 10 points. The result was a second half shutout. The result was a 3-quarter shutout after the first quarter. Those are realities. That is true. But there's a lot in there. When you actually go back, a robot could look at a box score, right? You got to go through the game. There was a 2nd and 1 before the field goal to make it 10-0. The Chargers, I think it was their second drive. They went right down the field, they kick a field goal, they get the offsides, then they score a touchdown 2 plays later, 7-0. Washington gets the ball, immediately punts. Now the Chargers get the ball back, and they're moving. And Danny, they had a 2nd and 1, or 3rd and 1, I think it was. And they run a play and get a first down for like 3 yards, and there was a penalty on the play that made
it. So it was 2nd and 1.
That's right.
It was a false start.
Because it was back-to-back. So it was 2nd and 1 false start that made it 2nd and 6. And on 2nd and 6... they hit Justin Herbert on an incompletion, and on 3rd and 6, they sacked him. And so instead of a 1st and 10, basically in the red zone, it's now 2nd and medium that turns into a big hit on the quarterback, and then a 3rd and 6, which is a much harder thing to do, and that leads to a sack almost at a field goal range and a 55-yard field goal. And so that was one of those where, like, the Chargers, again, kind of bail you out there when instead of a 1st and 10, who knows, it could be 14-0. And the game is littered with those. And that's not going to happen every week. It might happen Monday night against the Bears because they're not very good, because they're flawed, because They're in year one of a new coach, and they're still finding their way, and they're not that talented up front. But I think it's a reality. The other thing I'm going to say is that while I thought they rushed the quarterback well, like really, really well, best game I saw, most noticeable, fast game from Von Miller, Jacob Martin's best game, maybe Dorrance Armstrong's best game, certainly one of them. He had two sacks for the first time this season. I thought on the interior, Johnny Newton had a sack. He was noticed, made an impact. Daron Payne had that huge 7-yard loss play on a screen, made a couple of really nice plays in the backfield. As a defensive front, they dominated. They will not play a worse offensive line than they played on Sunday, period. They won't. It's not going to happen. And if the Chargers had their 5 starting offensive linemen, it's a different conversation. They don't. They lost their left tackle. They've lost their right tackle. They're both fringe all pros. And we said this last week. The 2 offensive tackles that they trot out there, they have a 3-guy rotation. They picked 2 out of. In fact, all 3 of them were in the bottom 9 among tackles in the NFL that had played so far in terms of the next-gen stats, metrics for pressure percentage, and some of that stuff. So they were pulling from some of the worst tackles who play and then still had injuries at the position during the game. So forgive me when I say you took advantage. Now, as you said, everyone's going to hear, oh, you guys are so negative, you guys are jerks, whatever. That's fine if you just want to hear that and keep it moving. The fact is, it's not a negative at all. It just means let's not act like we've arrived. Let's keep coming here. Let's keep figuring this thing out. If you're on that defensive front, you just tasted that blood. You know what it feels like. Find a way to keep moving forward and keep progressing. But specifically on the back end, Danny, I didn't think they had a lot fixed. I thought there were a lot of open receivers, a lot of big plays, and in the competitive portion of the game before they could drop extra DBs back because the Chargers were an obvious passing down, yeah. You know, down 2 possessions or whatever in the third quarter and beyond. They also lost their running back, Amarion Hampton, and started running less anyway. I thought they kind of did whatever they wanted for 2.5 quarters as a passing game and just shot themselves in the foot.
I thought so too. Yeah. I mean, and you even saw Hampton underneath a couple of times. Didn't go nuts before his injury, but still was open and available. I think at a long of 12 I think it was him that Frankie Louvu couldn't tackle in space. It may have been somebody else, but I think it was the Hampton on Louvu 1-on-1 where it just ripped right through Louvu's grasp, who was actually in good position that time. But yeah, they can. I just don't see. It's why I thought they'd lose the game, frankly. And I was dead wrong about that. I love the fact that I'm wrong. I like doing Victory Mondays way more than the alternative. But that's why, even with the pressure, I thought they would still be able to, you know, of the 5 or 6 or 7 sacks that they might have, there'd still be 30 times when the ball's in the air. And that's 23, 24, 25, 26 times where someone's going to be on the other end of it open. That's just how it felt to me. And that happened, but it also didn't because the Chargers miscues.
Yeah, so for me, I thought that they would harass Justin Herbert and get to him whenever they wanted to and basically sack him 6-7 times. 6-7. It was only 5, but they hit him 10 times. I got what I thought I was going to get in the second half, honestly. The first half looked nothing like I thought it was going to. And to the Chargers' credit, they were able to stay ahead of the sticks by running the ball a little better than I thought they would. And they moved the pocket really well. And they had some quick game stuff going. But they were even able to hold up okay on like 5-step drops in the middle of the field for a lot of those, you know, in-breaking things like Quentin Johnston. You remember the fumble play, yep. Some of that stuff. Like, they had whatever they wanted in the passing game. I thought the mobility of Herbert was a big reason for that. But as the game went on, when they knew they had the pass, and because of that, Washington knows you have to pass. There's just no way. You just cannot hold up with that group, and they didn't. But that's the question for you guys at 800-636-1067. Did the defense fix its problems, or some of them? We know they made strides. It was a much better performance. But do you think this was real progress and like some problems are solved here, or did they just play a team that they were able to get fat on? Kevin's in Arlington. What's up, Kev?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. So I think it's a little bit of we were very fortuitous in that, you know, Slater and Ault don't even play the game because they're banged up, and then their O-line got banged up during the game. Oh, and Hampton as well. So let's pump our brakes on if we need to on, you know, how improved the D is. What I want to do is I do want to throw a bone to the youngins. Okay, it was nice to see Newton, you just mentioned this, get a sack in the pass deflection that led to Sandertill's pick, which, by the way, made up for Sandertill's, you know, boneheaded play on the field goal that led to the first touchdown. The hit by Martin, and he's still a very young player, it turned the game. And, you know, Amos and Sandersville, these are nice young players. But I was really excited about finally seeing McGee in the front seven. I think he's a talented player who's been banged up, and I'm excited about that. But, yeah, the best defense is a great offense, and particularly when Clippy's running the ball and hogging the ball and resting our defense. That's just all I want to say about it.
Appreciate you, dude. Yeah, for McGee, Wagner still played 100% of snaps. They found a way to get McGee in on about 20% of those. The defensive look.
It seemed to me like they ran more looks with a third linebacker. Also, what was Luvu's snap count? Because I wonder if he
came in there,
off a little bit. But it seemed to 99%
me like, Luvu missed one snap.
So it was three linebackers.
Yeah.
So Luvu came down. This is actually what I was predicting preseason that we haven't seen any of, really, or very little of. But McGee playing as the second linebacker in the Luvu spot next to Wagner. I think you could do that a little more against a team like the Chargers that are going to be physical and try to run the ball with Greg Roman and heavy personnel packages, 12 and 13 and stuff. But then you had Luvu basically standing up or coming down at the line of scrimmage. So you had like a five-man front sometimes where you had McGee and Wagner at the second level. And McGee, he's fast. He made some plays.
He
was noticeable.
The play on the goal line especially.
Yes.
Where he's not sprinting, you know, all out to catch someone on the sideline, but is sort of doing that like basketball defensive slide drill, right? Where he's kind of sliding, shifting, you know, strafing as it were, and then shot upfield and stopped the guy dead. That was a great play.
Strafing's that's a great Madden term.
Old school Madden, that's where I went with you.
Jay in LA on Grant and Danny. What's up? How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, buddy.
I was actually at SoFi for the game yesterday, and I got to say that I'm still not confident that this defense actually got better because, like, watching it in person, you could feel that whenever Herbert had time, he could move the ball with ease. And most of the big stops from the Chargers came from them beating themselves from, you know, penalties, missed throws, protection breakdowns, all that. So it wasn't like we were dominating, and that's been a pattern. I feel like we've been front runners. You saw it against the Giants, against the Raiders, and now against the Chargers. Like, once the offense gives them that two-score cushion, then they can start flying around and looking lights out. But early in games when it's tight, the same issues keep showing up. So I'll give them credit for effort and energy. That does matter, but until they can get those stops when the offense isn't rolling, I can't say that the defense has turned the corner yet.
Appreciate that. That's a smart point, too, because early on when the offense hasn't gotten going yet, you're on your way to 17-0 or at best 13-0, right? But again, the turnover happened. Quan Martin makes that play. Then Lattimore, his head's up jumping on the fumble. But again, that's a 50-50 proposition. There was a Chargers receiver within arm length of it as well. If you don't get that, again, it's points are about to happen. But I think it's a great point, is once they've been up, they've feasted. Well, you think of the Giants and their other win that I'm blanking on. The Raiders, thank you.
Amarion Hampton, IR.
Yeah.
Ankle injury, out for at least four games. He left. That was another break for them, as it were, in the game with an ankle injury and didn't play down the stretch of the game either. He had a monster early part of the game. A lot of catches, as you said. I think six out of the backfield. In the early going, that was kind of the outlet. This was a full-on John Beck to Roy Helu situation where
yes.
I don't trust this line at all, so where are you at, Amarion? We're going to throw you the football. But he's going to miss a month, so they're already no Najee Harris for the season. Now, a quarter of the year without their RB2, who's really their best running back, but they're going to go deeper down the depth chart. The Chargers are in trouble right now.
Yes, they are.
They're losing
they're
too
really-
many guys. Next man up works. Next man up does not really work. And the Chiefs seem to always come out smelling like a rose, don't they? The walls are caving in. Oh, look how good the division is. The Broncos got a great win against the Eagles this weekend, and they are going to be frisky because their defense is awesome. But Bo Nix and the offense have come back to the pack a little bit. The Chargers were out to the 3-0 start, seem to be running away with the West. Now they've completely caved in with back-to-back losses to the Giants, who stink, and the Commanders, who are pretty good, it seems like. But when you're the Patriots, when you're the Chiefs, you know, these dynasties, you look at that division. Just seems like things go your way.
Always happens
too.
That way. I mean, just, yeah, as you said, ask the Patriots or ask the last couple years' Bills.
How much better do you feel about the defense is the question on Grant and Danny. Jay Gruden is going to join us coming up at 5 o'clock in less than 20 minutes.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Herbert looking that way, throwing, tip, intercepted at the goal line! Mikey Saint-Russell with the pick!
Mikey Saint-Russell's got two interceptions over the last couple of weeks. Washington's got three takeaways in that time, and three on the season through five games. They're 3-2. Big road win in L.A. yesterday. That was Kevin Burkhardt on the call. That goal line play made possible by the fingertips of Johnny Newton, who showed up yesterday with a sack and a batted ball that led to that interception. Jay Gruden is on the show coming up at 5 o'clock. That is one thing to circle back to the theme of some youthful contributions that I think you can feel pretty good about yesterday. Quan Martin has the forced fumble that completely changed the game. He was coming off a rough outing. Mikey Sanders still has an interception. Jeremy Reeves is playing a lot. And there's still times where either because of angles or he's a little out of position or whatever, he's diving at people's feet or something. But he is so physical and so violent. Like I will,
you notice him, yeah.
A guy like that every single time, Danny, where I remember playing high school sports and high school ball where someone would be like, hey, make a mistake, but make it at 1,000 miles an hour. I don't want you being timid. I don't want you, you know, shoot your gun was kind of what we said back then. Like, go try to make the play. And if you miss it, we'll coach that up too. But like, it's worse for you to kind of be standing there chopping your feet as someone runs past you. Like, go make a play. And Reeves does everything 100 miles an hour.
Yes, he does. There, you mentioned high school sports. There were always a couple guys that our coaches would love to have, like, go up against you in practice. Like, that was the dude that would end up kneeing you in the quad because he was, like, so physical and, like, right in your face. And it's like, I'm trying to go through the motions here in practice. But, like, it ruined the time. But opponents hated going against that guy because he's always laying wood. That's what it reminds me of.
Speaking of kneeing quads, how about when Jaden got leg whipped and like kicked right in the quad probably? Yep. What's the front of the hamstring?
The quad, yeah, the front of the leg.
I mean, he's got a thigh pad that might have helped him. But dude kicked the crap out of him.
Yeah, I didn't realize what happened in real time. Like there was because the screen worked initially or the TV coverage worked initially, there's something that happens, a flag goes down, and you go, oh, it must be holding because someone went to the ground and Daniels kind of burst through the hole, but he didn't go with the normal Daniels burst, if that makes any sense. And then as soon as they showed the replay, here's the guy like, oh no, I've fallen, turbulence, I've fallen down. Leg whip kick, trying to slow him down. Please don't do that to my precious little angel. Don't be kicking Jaden Daniels, please.
Speaking of officiating, did you watch Sunday Night Football last night?
Uh-huh.
The Sean Hockley show? Could they have thrown more flags?
They love it.
I mean, it was so bad. My wife was sitting there like, what is going on? I was like, well, it's a Hockley production. What else would you expect? With a Hockley on the broadcast, they got to get their TV time. Who have we seen more, Sean McDermott or Sean Hockley?
Oh, man.
And Sean Hockley has taken over the family
business. I was going to say, Sean Hockley.
Gigantic arms.
Yeah, Ed would begin, like, in the beginning of the Ford Pass, football was invented by, yeah, like, just so much time. So much airtime.
The Commanders right now, the number 7 offense in the NFL. Number 1 rushing offense
number
in
one.
Football.
That's number 1.
It's Bill season, baby. 5.8 yards per play for them. Number 17 passing offense. They're number 4 at avoiding interceptions. They're number 19 at avoiding sacks out of 32 teams. Danny, where do you think they rank right now in sacks per pass attempt?
I bet you it's pretty high because they've got a couple get fat games, thinking of this one and the Raiders. I'll say 8th.
They're higher than that. They're 6th right now.
Yeah, there you go.
And how often they're getting sacks at about 9.5% of the time. 5 teams have gotten more sacks. So it's the Broncos, the Steelers, the Lions, the Browns, Bills, and Falcons. I guess there's a tie in there. So it's actually Falcons and Washington tied. So it's Denver, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Cleveland, and Buffalo teams that get to the quarterback on a higher percentage of plays than Washington. And that was a big concern coming into the year. It's really only reared its head as a significant problem in one game. The Atlanta game, they couldn't get any pressure. In their other four games, I think they've done a really good job in that way. Yesterday, teeing off completely.
I thought Green Bay, they struggled at times too. But I think
that's true. Yeah. You know what? As I think about it, Love had a lot of time in that game.
They did better than the stats say, because actually I thought Love played really well and got rid of the football and, you know, moved out of danger a couple times.
No, but I think you're right. I think it's probably three games where they've done really, really well, one game where they did poorly, and then one game where they were awful.
Yeah, they had two, to me, excellent, feast on the bad group, kick their butt, don't apologize, nobody feels sorry for you. It ain't my fault that you can't block me. Let's all get our stats type games, and this one in the Raiders game.
Another one, by the way, I'm ready for my apology, sir. Mea culpa. Javon Kinlaw is a dude. I know why they paid him $15 million. Remember when we spent a lot of time in the offseason saying, why did they spend him $15
million? Mm-hmm.
I know why. Ask me, Grant, from a few months ago. Grant from right now can tell you the answer. It's because he is a wrecking ball in the running game. Why couldn't we find people in San Francisco and New York to tell us that this guy's going to be really good against the run?
And so my objection was more, did they have to pay him that much to sign him? Right? Like, who were they bidding against that was like, yes, I'll pay him triple what he's probably worth in the open market?
Sure, maybe. But that was also not the point everyone was making. Everyone was saying,
well, there's that too.
He's overpaid, number one. But number two, we had the people on that covered him in two stops. And they're like, he's not good against the run, but he also doesn't rush the quarterback. Well, he hasn't rushed the quarterback at all. They're not really asking him to. But he's been great against the
run.
Yeah,
he's dynamite, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, so maybe they found the right scheme, right fit, right whatever. But they identified it correctly. And that, to me, is the most important thing. Like, it's easy to take a guy, I mean, you've seen this in years past, think of Josh Norman was great playing this one way, and they go, that's awesome, we're going to have him play a different way. Albert Hainsworth was awesome as a 4-3 defensive tackle, but what if, and hear me out, we have him do something totally different. Let's see if that blows up in our face. So that's usually the hallmark, but getting him to do the thing that seems like a really good fit is absolutely working out at this point.
Peters' biggest bet last year has backfired and been an L so far, the Lattimore trade.
Yeah.
His three biggest bets of this year, so to speak, have been significant W's.
Tunsil, Samuel, and Kinlaw?
Yep.
Wins.
Mm-hmm. Laremy Tunsil's been excellent in pass pro especially, which is what you bring him in for. Deebo Samuel's been better than all expectations. They were just talking about him on Monday Night Countdown as one of the top players in the league so far this season. He's who their offense goes through and their passing game goes through. And then Javon Kinlaw has been a gigantic win up front for them with what they paid him. All right, Jay Gruden's next. What did he see when he watched the tape? How good is Bill? How sustainable is Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt being one of the best backs in the league? Remember, tomorrow at 5 o'clock in about 24 hours, he'll be joining us. Let's talk about him next, though, with Jay Gruden right here on Grant and Danny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.